and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you today. We are going to be doing so much stuff this hour. We're obviously going to be catching up on the news. I'm going to give you guys breaches of the week like I always do. And our deep dive today is going to be all things 5G. You've heard it's coming. You maybe not know. You maybe don't know what it is other than fast wireless. We're going to do the who, what, when, where, why of 5G, what it means for you. We're going to talk about your mobile phone and how to defend it. We're going to be talking about 6G. Yes, 6G as well. Stick around. It's going to be a great hour. And as always, we're going to start with the news. And in backup news, and yes, there is backup news, and I think this is actually really interesting. Now, I'm sure you've heard me, and I'm sure you've heard a million people in technology in some way, shape, or form say that you need backups in your life. Backups, backups, backups. This is what saves you from disaster, etc. But what about humanity? What about backing up who we are? Our literature, our works, our art, our books, our videos, our movies, you know, our art. And there's an organization that is actually doing this. It's called Arch Media Foundation. Now, about a week or two ago on Thursday, SpaceX just launched their Falcon 9 rocket. And it has in it basically a backup of humanity made by Arch Media. And this is interesting because it has something like 60 million pages of information regarding it, regarding humanity. Everything I just mentioned, art, literature, they backed up all of Wikipedia, for example, in its current state, books from Project Gutenberg, so much information, and they are putting it on the moon. Now, it is sitting basically on a disc that is essentially made of nickel, and it has 25 of these nickel discs in it. Each one is 40 microns thick. But this has been designed to withstand literally a billion years worth of just sitting on the moon. And I find this very interesting because the goal is basically if the lights are turned out on humanity, you know, if the Earth explodes or, you know, we just die due to extinction, whatever that is, there is a record of this. And with any good backup, the AMF, the Arch Media Foundation, decided to make redundant copies of the information. And so this one that I've been talking about on the moon is called the Lunar Project, but they also have this information in low orbit, and they are making plans to send other copies of this information out across the solar system. And so let's say, you know, Earth dies and takes the moon with it. Well, now maybe, you know, on like, I don't know, the one of the moons of Jupiter, like Io or something, you know, or maybe Mars, or, you know, one of the moons of Mars, like Deimos, you know, there's going to be a copy of this that may be unearthed by, you know, future humanity and evolution, you know, of another species on the planet. Or, you know, maybe aliens decide to show up and nuke us and then say, oh, shoot, you know, we didn't learn anything about them. Now they can download a copy of what we are. But one of the most interesting things about this, on top of our literature, on top of everything else, is that we have included genomes. We are including essentially the essence, the building blocks of what a human is. And if we're looking at this, maybe, you know, a million years in the future, if the lights do turn out on humanity, somebody decides to, you know what, we've got the genome. Why don't we fire up a human and see what it looks like? And maybe that restarts the population. We have no idea. But I think it's a very interesting idea. And I think it's really cool to know that, you know, if we are literally wiping ourselves off the face of the earth, and some people think we're going to become, you know, we're going to live for centuries, you know, humanity's going to live for millennia, be old and wise and capable and move to the stars. And some people think that we're probably going to nuke ourselves in the next week and everything in between. And so no matter what happens, there are backups of who we are and what we were out there. And I think that's pretty cool. And that is a little comforting to me, actually, if you think about it. But that is your backup of humanity news of the week. And in Facebook data mining news, and I swear this is just nonstop. Ever since I wrote that article, I feel like I could go and add like 40 addendums to it. But we recently learned in the last week or two that even if you don't have a Facebook account, and you're using a smartphone with various apps, your information is actually still being sent to Facebook. Now, here's what's going on. So basically, Facebook has a software development platform that a lot of apps are using to go ahead and integrate into their app so that it allows them to pull statistics and app events and all this kind of stuff. And some of the ones that we have found this in, according to reporting, and this was originally broke by the Wall Street Journal, who did the investigation, is that apps like Realtor.com, so if you're going to go search for a house and all that, you know, it gives you all the pricing, you can log in with an account, you can like, you know, the houses that you are interested in buying, et cetera. Another one is the heart rate monitor, like HR monitor, heart rate monitor. It is actually the number one heart rate monitor in the iTunes App Store. And also basically a app called Flow Period and Ovulation Tracker, which obviously tracks ovulation and all of that. And this is an app that you would interact with. So you would track your ovulation, for example, in that. And if you had a desire to get pregnant, you would signify that in the app. And then the app does things for you to help you out. All of these apps, plus many other apps, were actually taking that data and sending it to Facebook. Now, if you had a Facebook app, or rather a Facebook account, great. I mean, okay, now they know, Facebook knows literally when you're ovulating or if you have a desire to get pregnant or which house you're looking at or what your heart rate is. They are collecting that information. But we've also seen this in financial institutions and all of that, according to the Wall Street Journal. And they did not specifically specify which app or apps there were doing that. But imagine, you know, if your bank account is perpetually overdrawn, and now Facebook's going to know that. So maybe you get advertising for payday loans. You know, they find out you want to get pregnant. So now maybe you're getting advertising for, you know, I don't know, fertility clinics or baby stuff from Babies R Us, which I actually don't think exists anymore. But you know what I'm saying here. And if you don't have a Facebook account and you're thinking, well, that's no big deal, they're actually sending it back to Facebook and they're getting telemetry on you and possibly pairing you up even though you don't have it. Now, according to have an account, and according to this, the research that they did, they were able to, with some success, be able to pair somebody who has a phone, you know, via facial recognition, other characteristics and telemetry of the phone with the probability of who that person is. And so you may not have Facebook, but everybody around you has Facebook, which means you might have taken a picture with somebody and gotten tagged into Facebook. And now you're in Facebook's recognition system, even though they didn't know who you are specifically. And now you are giving them this information and they can possibly tag you and pair you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is a serious, serious problem. Now, Facebook did come out, according to the article, and say, hey, we are aware of this. We do not ask any of these makers for this very sensitive data. That is kind of against our policy. And so we've asked them to stop sending us that information. But here's the thing. That's well and good. But there are literally millions of apps out there in both iPhone and Android, because this affects both. And the Wall Street Journal did not run all of them. It just doesn't have the capability to do that. And so Facebook saying, okay, well, you guys found 10 apps, so we're going to talk to these 10 apps. Well, yeah, what about the other 5 million apps that are doing this? That's a serious problem, and a lot of people are not necessarily thinking about it in that way. So there you go. So if you're using any of those apps that I just mentioned, your information, your very sensitive information that you think is isolated to you and that app developer, is being shared with Facebook. And they went on to talk about data mining. The Wall Street Journal did data mining with Google and Apple as well, but Facebook was the main thrust of this. And it's actually very interesting in how it works. So it's just one thing after the other, I think, that we are going to have to perpetually see. And I know recently there have been some interesting calls, you know, for possibly breaking up Facebook as a monopoly. So we'll see where that goes. And I swear to God, there's like 5 deep dives in this one news thing. So anyway, that is your Facebook data mining news of the week. And hopefully you're not affected. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And in fraud news, and yes, we're going to be talking about fraud news here, we actually have some numbers in from 2018. And if you were not aware of the number one fraud category, drumroll please, it is romance scam frauds. Now, collectively, the United States has been taken for about $145 million in romance scams in 2018. These are people that basically are connecting online through, you know, take your pick, Match.com, eHarmony, etc. This affects all of them everywhere. And basically, somebody's falling in love and sending somebody money, And there is no reciprocation there in any way, shape, or form. People are just literally trying to rip people off by cozying up to them and then getting money. Now, the number one target for this is males aged 40 to 69. I don't think that's a bit of a surprise there, in the sense that that is tends to be a very vulnerable target. You know, for hacks, it's a little bit older, you know, doesn't necessarily have the same amount of defense capability given the age when we're filtering information. You know, and if you're in your 60s and lonely, I mean, it's pretty easy to fall for a scam. So here we are. Now, the average scam costs the users $2,600, which is something like 7 to 9 times higher than the number two category. So this is a very serious issue, and it's not going to be slowing down anytime soon in 2019. As we have more dating sites come up, you know, we're going to have this problem. I mean, and it's not just the traditional dating sites like your Match.coms. I'm sure it's Tinder as well and Grindr and a whole bunch of others. And so if you are online and you are looking for your true love, please, please, please do not send them money before you get to meet them and all of that, because odds are if you're sending them money, even if it's for a plane ticket and it seems legitimate, odds are it's a scam. And that's not cool. So take that for what it's worth, but hopefully you guys are staying safe while you're in love out there. In internet news, basically a state of emergency has essentially been declared. Now, if you're not familiar with ICANN, that's ICANN, they are basically the organization that controls names, domain names on the internet. So if you sign up and want to get a domain, you know, or a website, you know, www.whatever.com, and you go and you register that, it goes through ICANN. Now, they have recently had a meeting where they have declared an emergency in the sense that the internet infrastructure itself is under attack. And I think I could probably do an entire deep dive on this, but I thought this news was fascinating. I wanted to share it with you because we have seen organizations, corporations, institutions, governments, individuals, etc., come under attack from hackers. But what happens when the internet itself, that which connects us, is under attack? And so that is what they are seeing. And they've been tracking these attacks since 2017, but the attacks have become so large and prevalent that they are literally essentially declaring a state of emergency for the internet. Now, what's going on is hackers are attempting to basically hijack and disrupt what is called the DNS, or domain name system. This essentially routes the internet where you want to go on the internet. So for example, if you're typing in www.google.com, your computer or your device connects to a DNS server, and that DNS server says, ah, Google is over here at this physical IP address, and that's where you go to Google. Now, if I am able to hijack or disrupt that DNS, one, you may not be able to route to where you want to go because I simply will stop the routing. Or two, you type in google.com, and instead of going to google.com because I have taken over the DNS, I am now pointing you wherever I want you to go. That could be a website that looks exactly like google.com and you don't know the difference, or it could be a malicious site, it could be advertising, it could be whatever. And so they are trying to figure out who's exactly doing this to the internet right now. Is it state-sponsored hacking? You know, is it a hacker collective that's doing this? But prior to this, and prior to them tracking this in 2017, we in the cybersecurity community had been tracking basically somebody, we're not sure who, could be the Russians, could be, you know, whoever, probing the internet in various ways just to see where the pain points are, where the possible, you know, entry points are for hacking and pushing. And so we're not necessarily sure if, you know, it is, again, a state-sponsored hacking situation that we've got here, or, you know, if it's, you know, if it's just random. But we are starting to see this rise up. Now, I recently wrote an article that was released for Forbes. I want to say February 25th or something along those lines. And basically the title of the article is, Can the U.S. Cyber Defense Infrastructure, basically the U.S. government cyber defense infrastructure, withstand another government shutdown? And this is relevant to this in the sense that I reported in that, you know, in that article that what the U.S. government had seen when it was shut down was a massive increase in DNS hijacking against government infrastructure, government websites, and all of this. And so this is a very serious problem that we have going on right now. And we are doing, I think, you know, not as much as we should to be addressing this, especially at the infrastructure level. I mean, imagine the entire internet being knocked out. That would grind everything to a halt. Commerce wouldn't be able to run. We wouldn't be able to properly communicate with each other. Our apps wouldn't be able to work because they wouldn't know where exactly to phone home. It's a serious, serious issue that we've got. And I'll keep you guys up to date on this. I might actually do a deep dive on this. It's such a big issue. And we'll go from there. But that is a serious, serious problem. And in military news, and this is actually two news stories rolled into one, because I think this is actually fascinating and one dovetails with the other. The first one we're going to be talking about is NATO. Now, NATO decided to run an exercise with its troops, although it didn't tell the troops what the exercise was, and they decided to see what information they could get from their troops on social media. And so the NATO researchers basically developed fake and real military profiles, fake Facebook groups, and all of this, and then sent out to advertise to these troops. And what they found was actually interesting. They were able to ensnare 150 of NATO troops into this and basically completely fake them out. They thought they were connecting to friends or fellow military comrades. Basically, the advertising was driving them to private Facebook groups where they could freely talk to each other. And the information that NATO was able to gather on things like troop movements, locations of battalions, and on and on and on was absolutely staggering. They were even able to coerce some of the troops to do things like abandon their post, basically behavior that no military ever wants to see. Now, the interesting part about the NATO exercise is that outside of the actual manpower for the research group to basically make these Facebook groups and then, you know, interact with the soldiers a bit, it cost them $60. $60 of advertising time on Facebook to snare 150 soldiers and literally get troop movements, battalion deployments, and a whole bunch of other sensitive information. That's a serious problem. And now the reason why I'm combining this with another news story is because about 48 hours after I reported on this and the world reported on this, I did not obviously break that story, I simply report, the Russian military decided, or specifically the Russia's parliament, the Duma, on a vote from 400 to 50, voted to ban all smartphones for Russian military personnel. And so if you are serving in the Russian military, no Android, no iPhone for you. What you can have is an old phone that will do things like allow you to make phone calls and text message, but nothing smart, no social media, nothing that can be possibly compromised and used as a very easy eavesdropping device. As we know, we can hijack Android and iPhones very easily. I also talked about that in my last radio show with Qatar, being able to hijack iPhones with a product called Karma. And so Russia says basically, no, we're not going to do this. Now, what's interesting is I think Russia is doing this for two different reasons. And I think it's been coming for a long time for them is one, obviously this NATO report was just incredibly damning because soldiers were literally just giving stuff up. And two, they have seen U.S. military personnel fall for things like this rather unknowingly. And it's not even that they're doing anything wrong. So for example, soldiers train, they have physical therapy or physical, you know, training and all that. And so they use oftentimes smart bands, and Strava, which is a smart band, basically it's a GPS tracker. As the soldiers were running the military installations, it was basically putting it out on Strava's social media. Hey, this is where I ran, but what are they doing? They're mapping military installations and locations, and that is a serious problem for U.S. military operational security. And so I think Russia saw that, plus the whole NATO thing, and said, yeah, we're just done. There's going to be no smart technology as long as you're, you know, in the military in Russia, and that will be significantly safer for everybody. Now, what's interesting about this is that the troops from NATO, I think, were caught very easily, primarily because we are tribal. They saw comrades. They saw other people that they know or other military people and think, this is a safe environment for me to share. I can share my gripes, my complaining, my good, my bad, my everything with these people because they get it. They're walking in my shoes. And that couldn't be further from the truth, especially if these are people are malicious. And so for $60, imagine what a state-sponsored hacker like a Russia or a China, North Korea, Iran, even the United States would be able to pull on another country's military, simply by lack of education, simply by just being there for that person, you know, I hear you, man. My job sucks too. I'm deployed over here when I'm really not. And here we are. And so that's something to consider. But what I think is going to happen as a result of this Russian move is I think other major militaries, maybe even the United States, although I doubt it or it would take longer, is going to start banning smart technology from its troops because it's simply easier to remove the technology than train. So we'll see what goes on there. But that was Russian news for the day, and that was NATO's news for the day. And in election news, we are actually not going to be talking about the United States. We're going to be talking about Switzerland. Now, the Swiss government is holding an election this year, and they have, prior to the election, invited hackers into their voting system to basically run penetration tests. In other words, a lot of organizations and companies do this. So, hey, we're going to have a new product out there. Why don't you come and break it for us? Show us where the vulnerabilities are. If you're able to find a vulnerability, we're going to pay you and pay you well. And that gives us the ability to fix and harden our systems. And the Swiss are doing just that. That is literally what the Swiss have decided to do. And I think it is absolutely, absolutely needed. Now, interestingly enough, the Swiss have been on the forefront of voting technology for literally years now. About a decade ago or so, they ran an election. I want to say it was 2009, actually, where they ran an election where they actually used encryption, quantum encryption, to move voting totals from their little states called cantons to the capital of Bern. And I found that very interesting because it's the first time that we had had a practical trial of quantum encryption, and they were literally on the forefront of doing that. And so this is the first country where I've seen where I've basically seen the country itself say, yes, hackers, please come on in. You know, we're gonna basically run a competition. You guys can break into this and show us where our vulnerabilities are. And I think that's a great, great thing. Now, I know that we have a couple of different companies that do voting machines in the United States. We are not uniform. I know there's Diebold, and I think it's ESNS is another one out of, I think, Omaha and some others. And there have been some serious flaws and problems. I know I've talked about that on the radio show here, you know, in the past, because that's a serious issue. When we have kid like 11-year-old kids showing up to hacking contests and breaking into voting machines, that's not a good sign. And so I would fully, you know, want the U.S. government to back something along these lines, where we are taking all these voting machines, we're letting everybody break in, and then we're getting them hardened and then rinsing and repeating that process. We need to make sure, just like every country needs to make sure, that their voting process is secure and it's honest and it's fair. And I really applaud the Swiss government for doing this, because quite frankly, I don't think a lot of us are. So with that, kudos to the Swiss. And that is your voting news of the week. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you, or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And this week's breaches of the weeks, breaches of the week, and there are many different breaches, as always, that we talk about here on the Deep Dive Radio Show, because it's simply nonstop. And the first one, and this is pretty much, I think, going to be like HIPAA breach of the week, medical breach of the week. And there's a few other breaches, and we're not starting there, but the majority of them just seem to be medical based. And here we go. So we're going to start with Pompano or Pompano Beach, Florida. Now, they have a water bill payment system, and that is run by a company called Central Square. Now, they are claiming a data breach between August 20th and December 6th of last year. And so basically, this has affected 3,790 citizens of Pompano Beach or Pompano Beach, Florida. And if you live in that area and you have a water bill with them, you might want to check that out, because you could be possibly hit, which means your personal information might be out there. Moving on, let's start with the medicals now. We're going to be talking about the University of Connecticut Health Network, or UConn Health Network. They estimate that 300,000 patients and employees were affected by a data breach, half of which may actually have compromised social security numbers in it. And basically, the way the hackers got in is they took over email accounts. And by virtue of taking over email accounts from the UConn organization, they were able to hit this. Now, the University of Washington Medicine, or UW Medicine, pretty much looked at UConn and said, hold my beer, because they ended up with 974,000 patients affected. Now, this ended up being a vulnerability on one of their websites. This was discovered on December 4th, and it was released. They released a statement about this on December 26th, but this obviously flew under the radar. I do breaches of the week every week on Sundays, and I pretty much scour the internet looking worldwide for the data breaches, whether it's disclosures or news reports or whatever it is, and then I compile it and I do video and audio on that, and this flew under the radar. I did not know that they had disclosed this, which I find interesting because I'm pretty thorough about this. And so I'm wondering how they disclosed it. You know, did they print it out on a piece of paper and staple it to a wall somewhere and that is officially disclosure? I don't know. But that is a huge problem, obviously, for them, almost a million patients. And interestingly enough, the vulnerability, you know, we have seen time and again, if you are not keeping your websites and your software up to date, patched, defended, and all of that, vulnerabilities creep in that hackers will exploit. And UW Medicine, you just proved that point. Moving on, we're going to be talking about the Rocky Mountain Healthcare Rocky Mountain Healthcare Services. Now, they just sent letters to 971 patients alerting them of a recent data breach. Now, apparently, an employee's laptop was stolen on May 15th of 2018, and they believe, but could not confirm, that this data, the data on this laptop, has names, addresses, dates of birth, social security numbers, and limited medical treatment information, you know, as part of this incident. And the interesting thing about this one, I want to say, is that this was stolen on May 15th, 2018. So we're talking about roughly, let's say, 10-ish months ago or so, and we're just hearing about it now. Now, what's interesting about compliance law for data security a lot of times is that you can pick and choose the timing of your release. You know, I'm sure they knew very quickly that a laptop was stolen. It's not like hackers had been infiltrating their network and silently removing data until they were eventually caught. I mean, it's a physical laptop that was physically stolen. And so I find that interesting, but it really underscores a point that a lot of times when we have some kind of data breach, and if we are one of the 971 patients for the Rocky Mountain Healthcare Service from May 15th to when they disclosed, we had no idea that our personal information may be there and on sale on the dark web. And I think that's something to consider because a lot of people don't. And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.